I think I've always grown up in a family that has been political by nature. We've always been encouraged from growing up to challenge things and to not just accept things when we felt something was wrong, where there was an injustice. So when I came to the island, I came here to work as a nurse. I'd done my training, and that's something I remain hugely passionate about. But I could see that there were some issues within the healthcare system, and I felt that rather than being someone who continued to say, actually, there's some problems here and not being able to gain traction, I thought it was right that I threw my hat into the ring, threw my head above the parapet, and tried to make some real and lasting change in that area.
So health was the area that really pushed you towards politics?
That was certainly the key driver. Since coming in, though, of course, I've developed interest in all sorts of areas, some of which I would never have known about. I mean, I joke when I talk to people, when I first was elected to the scrutiny committees, one of the first things we looked in was sewerage. And I found myself standing inside a sewerage plant thinking, I'm not quite sure where how I got to this point. And yet developing actually a real fascination with how we were processing sewerage, trying to understand the calculations in terms of decisions, whether we would bring sewerage back centrally or whether we would go for regional sewerage and how those decisions have been made. So I've always been interested since being elected very much in the process of how decisions are made, the governance frameworks around them to make sure that we're making the right decisions at the right time to the benefit of the people of the Isle of Man and Douglas East.
Interestingly, should politicians be prepared to say, I don't know anything about that, but there's a subject I'm prepared to learn, of course, but I don't know anything about it?
Absolutely.
I mean, politicians seem to back away from it, being made to look as if they're a little ignorant of a subject.
Yeah, for me, I think it's absolutely right that sometimes there are things that I certainly don't know about. And, you know, I think with constituency issues, you get things every day and there's never a day that's the same. And there's certainly always things that you think, wow, I never realised the impact that could be having on someone's life, and I want to understand, which is why I'll talk to people, listen, want to understand, and then look at how best the areas that I can influence might be addressed.
You quoted, and I quote you from 2016, "The world I dream of for our children, where borders are taught in geography, not politics." 5 years later, any progress towards that dream? Yeah.
I've been frustrated with some of the debates we've had. Certainly the Syrian refugees debate would be something that I would cite. And the COVID...
You'd like Syrian refugees to be able to come over here for us to take Syrian refugees?
So I believe we should have explored further the option of bringing a small number of Syrian refugees to our island where they could be contributors to our economy. Because actually, I think that we are all born in a place, and by virtue of our birth place, we have limitations or opportunities placed upon us.
Would they go in their own community or would they be assimilated? How would you actually bring them in?
I think just walking through Douglas East actually and knocking on doors shows you how well we have people from all across the continent of Europe and all across the world actually living together, working together, and people aren't divided by, or they shouldn't be divided by difference, they should be united by their similarities, but also to celebrate their difference. And we have that across Douglas East and across our island.
That's a great aim, but would that work in the Isle of Man?
I think it already does work in the Isle of Man, actually, and I don't think that it's celebrated enough. It's been a privilege for me to be involved in the One World Centre, for example, and I think you see the Global Village on Timwald Day, this glorious celebration of everything from across our island, the people who make it up and the rich tapestry of experience and culture that's brought with them. And I think, for me, that's something that should be celebrated. It's certainly something that I raise my children to aspire to, that we should only ever question people's behaviours based on their behaviours, whether they're good, they're kind, whether they're nice people, and they've tried their best. I certainly wouldn't want them to ever judge someone based on their gender, their religion, their ethnicity, or their sexuality, or any other difference. For me, that's irrelevant.
Can I just stay with gender? Because when you stand and speak in the Keys and in Timbald, are you speaking as a representative of your sex? Are you standing up and saying, I want to put a point for my gender, basically, put points that may not be picked up by male members, etc.?
I think the majority of points made in Timwald can be made by any member, and I think we've seen that very, very clearly.
But do you feel an onus on yourself to speak for women, if I can put it that way?
I think I would want to speak for everyone, and certainly for people who don't have a voice. I've been delighted to see more of a voice for women. But it's interesting when you look at the He for She campaign, that actually equality and change is done not just by women, as an example, speaking for themselves, but also by men speaking up for inequalities that affect their other gender. And that works in reverse as well. When there's an inequality that affects men, it's absolutely right that women stand up and speak out. The same happens for our people of colour community, and for the LGBTQIA plus community. There are many communities who don't have representation in Tynwald, and it's absolutely incumbent on people who are put in that place and given that privilege of representing their constituents to represent all of their constituents, not just the ones that are absolutely as they are.
You mentioned LGBT 2As and an A plus and etc., which is quite a lengthy of initials for people to understand. Can I just quote Lady Gaga? You say, "Rejoice and love yourself today because, baby, you were born this way." For some people, there is still deep confusion about the divisions that are being put up, etc., saying this community here, this community there. What would you say to them who have this confusion?
So I think, as you say, there are people who struggle with the acronym, the LGBTQIA+. It has changed and it's evolved. And actually, we are, I think, probably more understanding now that our trans members of our society actually have greater struggles in regard to healthcare. And there's a real focus that's needed in that area. And there's a lower understanding of non-binary and gender fluidity as well. Those are things that I think are really important. They're things that should be taught within schools, actually. So there's an understanding, and it's about tolerance for me, actually. It's about saying we are all different, and that's not a choice thing. That is how we are. Those are things that are absolutely inherent to ourselves. So for me, it's an understanding element. But I long for a day where we don't need any labels, and we just treat everyone as a human being and we treat them equally. All the time that doesn't happen, there is a need to highlight that difference to empower the change that's needed to get to equality.
But there is a discussion about people who feel at a certain stage in their life that they feel that they're not what they started out to be, etc. How much leeway should there be given for people to actually say, no, I feel more comfortable as someone else?
I think we need to provide the support for people who are exploring their journey, whether it be through gender or sexuality, at any stage in their life. I've certainly been humbled to hear stories from people who later in life have actually had the opportunity to really reassess things that have never quite seemed right to them, and they've followed societal norms, as they were, but they recognise that actually that isn't them. And when they have the opportunity and they're empowered to talk about that, they start to find out more about themselves and they start to rediscover themselves. And it can actually be far more difficult in some circumstances for someone who has married in what would appear on the surface to be a heterosexual relationship, when they realise that in fact that isn't their true authentic self, and they have to try and untangle and unpick. And there's an element of support that's needed in doing that, not just for the person who's having that question internally and trying to find themselves, but also for the family, because there are other people who are involved. And it's important that we don't forget that wider circle that may well need support in that circumstance.
You've been part of legislation behind sexual offences, obscene publications bill, domestic abuse act, abortion reform. It doesn't paint an awfully great picture of the state of the nation, does it? I mean, has that legislation achieved what you hoped it would achieve?
So we're still certainly in the process. I think I wouldn't say, oh, we've done it all, ticked it off, and well done us. We've put the primary legislation into place. What now needs to come is the secondary legislation that comes off that, the guidelines, the information and the education, so that people understand what that means to them in the situation they may find themselves in. But what is imperative is we've made those primary and first steps in this.
To start.
It's a start. So there was already some legislation. We recognised the legislation wasn't strong enough. It wasn't whole enough. We had moved on hugely in terms of technology, and that was being used to exploit people through sex offences, through some of the awful situations people had found themselves in with sexting and so on, which just wasn't covered and couldn't be covered in historic legislation. So we've been able to modernise our legislation, build the framework around which that will sit. And now there's a big piece of work that's already going on in Home Affairs that I've been privileged to sit in and work with, in terms of developing the secondary legislation to make sure that that legislation that has been created thus to date actually leads to true change in terms of outcomes.
So this is a work in progress?
It's a work in progress, but it's a huge piece of work. Sex offences, domestic abuse, lots of places around the world have been evolving and developing their legislation in this area. And it's absolutely right we get it right. If you find yourself in that situation where you are a victim, it's imperative that the law recognises you actually at the centre of everything and doesn't focus so almost primarily on the offender, but says actually there's a victim in amongst this who must be absolutely absolutely supported, cared for and directed to the appropriate services and held to be very important in the process of getting justice.
We move to another work in progress, the Promenade.
Yes.
You've been very much involved in this, obviously, as a Douglas East. You've been on committees and things. It's a mess, isn't it?
It's been an absolute fiasco, and I think our final report was very clear on that.
Well, who's responsible for it being a fiasco?
So we've been very frustrated around how the project management has happened in terms of the promenade. We've felt that some of the elements that have been placed on people within the department as it's currently structured is probably outside of what their normal ability would be able to achieve. And so we've been very careful not to say it's not a person necessarily, it's the bigger picture.
Are you saying the company wasn't up to the job?
No, it's not the company. The company can only work within the framework they were given. There has been miscommunications from the start. When you looked from the beginning of the promenade scheme, where the businesses were a side note at the bottom of an impact statement that was one side.
Who should have noticed that at the word go? Who should have thought, yeah, that's important, we've got to deal with that before we start?
So for me, that would have been what your project management team should have been looking at.
But surely someone over top should have said, yeah, that's what they should have been doing and told them to do it.
Well, I would suggest that a comprehensive project management team could have come up with the fact that there should have been a clear impact assessment that went into far more detail than it did. And when I'm speaking, you know, I was speaking to businesses and constituents who live along the promenade right from the beginning, and it's been a huge piece of work over the last 2.5 years. And again, you know, those stories people were telling were harrowing. They were really horrendous, and I don't think that was coming out early on, which is why the committee chose to look into it. And we structured it, you know, over 3 reports in the end. One to look at the failures in terms of project management and the wider ability of government to manage large scale projects and to work in the realms of contracts that they weren't familiar with or used to. Also to look at the impact on businesses and those people who lived in the area. Because even now we've got, once work started to pick up a little bit of pace, we've got hotels where 7 a.m. people are drilling. People are coming down here for a nice relaxed weekend, and 7 a.m. bing, the diggers are on, and people are now complaining in the hotel saying, hang on a minute, you know, we've come here, we thought we'd get a lie in.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's just a thing of the past. Years ago, the Irish scheme had the same effect on hotels.
Yeah, but it's the prolonged nature of that. You know, if there had been a short period of time, a year even, but that people knew, it's the fact that this has been extended and extended. Only last week, we've seen another month's extension. That's the month till the point that the project finishes, but then there'll be the 4 weeks rectification period. That's if the rectifications can be done within 4 weeks, although they have to be. If they can't, I mean, it's not like we're going to say, okay, you've rectified as much as you can in 4 weeks, off your bob. We're then going to have to find the work to do everything else, and that's without addressing the issues that, you know, I do still have concerns around, that we haven't done this to the highest specification. There's elements that have been de-scoped from the work, and yet the budgets have remained the same. And I say we've pulled all that into our report. We are absolutely clear that there will likely be a need for the Public Accounts Committee and the next administration to look further into this, how this got out of hand, and how it seems when you've got a big project, it almost becomes a fait accompli that you can put additional money to it. Because actually, what can you do once you've got the holes in the road and people are suffering is just keep throwing money at it.
Can I just talk about the Public Accounts Committee? You're on the Public Accounts Committee. You've also on, I think, an Infrastructure Committee. How useful are these? Do they achieve anything?
I find them to be incredibly useful, but actually I'd like to see longer term a development of scrutiny. So at the minute, I think there's almost a little bit of a discomfort from Comin over scrutiny, and it's seen as a, you know, this is what you've done wrong. I'd love to see scrutiny happening far more on the emerging policy and the developing policy, and from the ministers actually seeing that as a real asset. Because if we can develop and spot things and talk to the public and act as a conduit early on, hopefully we can prevent us getting to the point where we're saying, oh my goodness, look how awful this is, to saying, if you don't sort this, you will end up with this problem. And actually, let's work together, because ultimately we all want to achieve the right outcomes, which is projects that come in on budget, less disruption to the people who live in the local area, and ultimately a benefit, net benefit to the economy of the Isle of Man.
I'd like to talk to you about social media in a moment. First, a blunt question. Would you like to be Health Minister?
It would depend. Certainly, I would consider any role. I always worry that I would be too close to health. I feel that I've been able to serve a very,
you're very close to health.
Purpose.
And that you sit next to the health minister, obviously. So you're
well, I do sit next to
the
health.
Team,
yeah, yeah, physically very close. From my perspective, I wouldn't want there to ever be an accusation that I was, pro nurses and anti anything else. That's certainly not my
way.
So
do you think you're too close to the subject?
I think there's a perception I don't believe I'm too close. I think I've been able to distance myself. I hope anyone who's worked with me within DHSC would be able to say that I have constructively challenged, but tried to do that, as I say, in that very constructive manner. I certainly don't think I'm someone who wants to just throw grenades in and then just walk away. That just isn't me. I want to work with people to get the outcomes right. And I think that's really important. As we move forward, we're going to have some challenging times. We recognise the position we've been in through COVID, and we're not out of that period yet. We may be moving to less restrictions, but there is going to be recovery from an economic position. There's going to be the longer term effect on physical health with long COVID, mental health for people who've been isolated for long periods of time. And there's going to be a big pressure to get those things right.
It sounds as if you'd like to be involved with that, looking at that. Social media, you said you were devastated by the news that Caroline Flack took her own life. Social media, is it a force for good, for evil, someone in the middle? Should there be more control on it from what people can say?
I think it can be both. And I'm more than happy for people to challenge my policies on social media. I think the things that upset me is when people just criticise, not just politicians, journalists get the same, but it's a personal thing. And actually, I don't think that there's a benefit in that. And I find that frustrating. And maybe I'm too sensitive in some ways. But there are things that I've read about myself that do upset me. And I don't have any ability to reply because it will just become a spat. And actually, I don't think that achieves anything. I also worry, you know, I've got children who are 7 and 9, and I worry one day they'll read those things and they'll start to think, oh, hang on, you know, why are people saying unkind things when
so
I spend all my
time... So should people be allowed to do that? Should they be allowed to say some of the things that are said?
I think there has to be a free speech, ultimately. I think people have to but there has to be the ability to challenge. I personally, on many occasions, haven't taken that opportunity because I just don't want to get into a tit-for-tat argument. I don't think it benefits anything. But I'm always happy to engage in debate over policy. I think that's ultimately what I'm put into this role for, is a policy and scrutiny role. I'm not here to cast aspersions, whether they are negative aspersions on people's characters, because that just achieves nothing.
Of course, this is a national, but you are elected by a constituency, Douglas East. How much of a community is Douglas East? It's very disparate in its makeup of people in the community. How much of community is it?
I think it has lots of micro communities within Douglas East in terms of localities. It's a strange constituency in some ways, because it's a very long constituency. It's not just a round geographical area that has a hub. I mean, we've got the Strand Street Shopping Centre, but most of the facilities that are in Douglas East are actually national almost facilities rather than being local facilities. So I think when I talk to people, there's a great sense of community in Douglas, whether that's broken down by the four regions in terms of East, North, South and Central, I'm not sure. But certainly Douglas, I think, has a strong community feel.
Okay, just two questions. First of all, as far as your constituency is concerned, and then as far as the island is concerned, if you had to pick one issue that you'd want to see an answer to and that get some progress on, first of all, as a constituency, then as an island. Constituency first. What's the most important thing? I would imagine you'd say the promenade.
There's a few things I think that pull together, and the promenade would be a huge part of it, but then also those elements that come off the promenade. So the brownfield redevelopment of those sites that sit along the promenade, and also the parking. We need to get embedded into our policy how we manage parking. If we're going to redevelop an area, we don't want to have a huge net increase of cars. We have to look at alternatives, whether that be electric bike charging points, whether we look at some areas being more pedestrian focused. I think we are over focused on cars in Douglas, and actually we don't have the space and the capacity. But for me, that is an iterative process. I don't want to, in the short term, damage the businesses that really rely on people coming in. So there has to be alternates to get people in before we can make those changes. But it would revolve around that element and that area at the minute. That for me would be a priority.
And a national issue, I presume, is getting the economy back on its feet.
Yeah, so again,
I'm sorry, I'm putting words in your mouth.
Yeah,
I shouldn't be doing that.
But a few things fall in together. So for me, economic recovery is going to be absolutely key in terms of us achieving lots of the other elements. So, you know, for me, climate change is very important. But in order to achieve that, we've got to get ourselves to a strong economic position. And actually, they work both ways, because if we can get into far more improvement of our green credentials and looking at renewable energies and looking at investment in those elements on the island, we can perhaps do both things hand in hand. So I don't see any of these things as separate and standalone. I think we need to have a far better mentality of working across the piece and really looking at how different issues can benefit us in lots of different ways.
Claire Barber, who's obviously all fired up and ready to go for the election for Douglas East, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.